With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Thursday, June 20th. Happy birthday to my wife. And I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. And you can find all the great Ware products here. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your chicken fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com. It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much. Today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Let me get my my glasses on here. There we go. Actually, let me go ahead and take them back off and clean these suckers. A little cloudy looking through the lenses. So, but I hope y'all are having a great day. Thank you very much for tuning in. It is a busy day here at the homestead. I've already been outside early this morning. A little bit of weed eating, a little bit of mowing, a little bit of blowing, a little bit of watering, all that kind of good stuff. And after the radio show, still have a good bit to one of those days. You know, things just seem to happen to be due, and things need to be done on the same day. And to do that, your house right here. So I got out of the big city down here in a little while. My for the tour coming up next week. Very, really excited for that. And then back to it's Jen's birthday. Happy birthday, Jen. Yay! We are back. No problem. So I wanted to try Windstream again. We've got some technical difficulty in this area. I did call them yesterday. Ready for this? This is crazy. I called them yesterday and said, you know, since we've been back into town this week, everything's been running very, very slow. And in fact, today during my podcast, live broadcast of my podcast, it went completely dead. It's been intermittent all week, on, off, on, off, on, off. And so she said, I'm sorry about that, Mr. Schneider. Let me go ahead and check and see if we have any other reports. So there have been several people that have reported this problem here in the area. And then she looked up and she said, hey, it looks like our system's telling us that it's just too much usage in the area. And she admitted, she says, and our equipment can't handle it, too much usage at any given time. So we've got a work ticket in, and it looks like you'll be experiencing very slow DSL and internet connectivity through the 30th of June. And so she's a very, very nice, sounded very young lady. And so I didn't give her a piece of my mind at the time, but I'm thinking about calling them back today and letting them know how I feel about that and see what kind, if anything, of discount I can do. I'd really like to hear their discount. So tell me, if I'm not getting what I'm paying for, what kind of discount am I going to get on my bill? But they won't be expecting that. So and see what they say. So that's another thing on the to-do list I need to need to do today. So, but no, we were talking about all the great things we've got to do today.
Gotta go. Happy birthday. Oh, here, give Uncle Sam all your money. So we've got to do the tag things. Here in Georgia, you pay your ad valorem tax on your vehicles and everything you own on your birthday. Or it's due on your birthday. Happy birthday. Give us all your birthday money. So we got to head down there. And we already had gotten the cars done several weeks ago, at least two cars. And the Kia is in a combo name. But I started putting everything in her name a while ago, in case I kick the bucket, then that'll be a lot less work for her and stress and things like that. So, but anywho, the lots and lots of things to do today, and we're looking forward, looking forward to that. And so, a busy day around the homestead. The garden is kicking in gear. I was down there putting in the solar night eyes lights, and the scarecrow's up. It is about that time. I take them down in between seasons, and so the deer don't get too used to them year-round. So I take them down and put them in the barn in the off-season when nothing's down there. And then once it's about time for the deer to start coming in, you know, the peas and beans are starting to bloom. We're starting to get some peppers and some squash, cucumber, and things like that in. So we're probably due for some deer to start wandering in the garden, so yesterday evening, I've got about 12 or 14 solar night eyes that I have on some 1.5 or 2 inch PVC posts that with a T at the top that I made and painted green so they don't stick out like a sore thumb. And I put those in strategic spots throughout the garden to try to keep the deer out. And they do work. I know a lot of people use those to keep predators away from your chickens. And we've had them as sponsors in the past on the radio show. In fact, both companies that make those units, Solar Night Eyes, as well as Night Guard Solar. And, you know, I've used both. The Solar Night Eyes are a little bit less money. You get really, I think, more bang for your buck because there's two LED lights flashing instead of just one. So really double your money for the same price, if not a little less. I've been using them for the last 2 years here at the garden to keep the deer out, and they do work. Now, my theory on predators is that, you know, if you do what you need to do when you're setting up your coop and your run, if that means taking a little bit more time to save a little bit more money to do it right and buy the right fencing and the right stuff that you need, the right coop that you need, and doing it right the first time, then you shouldn't have to buy these things at $20 a pop to put around your coop to prevent predators. Okay, if you do what you're supposed to do the first time and spend that little extra money to get it done right the first time, then you shouldn't have to spend $20 a pop for these night guard solars or these solar night eyes and things to protect your chickens, because you've already made sure when you set up your coop that you've done that. And there's always a catch. There's always an exception to the rule. There's always that one little spot. Some of these critters are smart, but that's my theory, you know. But I do know these things work for deer. I have proof. Won't get into it now, but so I put them up take them down in between garden seasons, which may end up being, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, maybe a couple of months, depending on before we plant again, based on, you know, about year-round gardening down here in South Georgia. But anyway, got those up yesterday to keep the deer out, and they do work for deer. I wouldn't waste my time doing it if they did. So got those up. I still have three more in the barn, and I know exactly where I'm going to put them. So I'll try to get those out today when I'm going through my to-do list to do. But yes, they actually do work. So if you're curious, there's science behind them. They work to keep predators away, and you can read about the science. But I don't use them around my chickens. You know, like I said, if you feel like if you spend the money ahead of time, do what you're supposed to the first time, you wouldn't need to buy these things for $20 a pop. You're going to need at least four of them. That's $80, maybe $100 after shipping. You know, hey, just put that money into good fencing, to good construction, to a good coop, burying the fence. Put that money towards putting a ditch witch and burying that fence, you know, 18 inches deep, things like that. Then you wouldn't have to need this to keep the predators away from your inferior coop and run. How about that? So still use the product, though, for deer around the garden. That's why I use the solar night eyes units. You got to love it. Today we've got a great show. It is the third Thursday of the month. We've got poultry scientist and professor co-author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, Dr. McRae, PhD. She is here. She is in the caller queue. She is in the chat room. And she wants to know if we are ready to learn about mycotoxins. I'm guessing that's how you pronounce it. When I first saw it, I was like, does she mean microtoxins? And then I looked at it and I double-checked it again, and I'm like, no, I know Dr. McRae. If there's not a R in there, then there shouldn't be an R in there. And she just typed it again in the chat room. So it's mycotoxins, not microtoxins. So at first, how dare me second guess Dr. McRae? That is just shame on me. We always, it could have been a misstroke on the keyboard or something, but I know better than that when dealing with Dr. McRae. So no worries there. Just a real quick rundown, and then we'll get right to our topic today. Want to mention real quick where we'll be stopping next week on the Tractor Supply Chicken Whisperer Power to the Poultry Tour. Okay, Wednesday the 26th, we'll be in Anderson. Wednesday the 26th, next Wednesday, Anderson. Anderson, South Carolina, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And then Thursday, we will be in Easley, South Carolina, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Tractor Supply there. And then Friday, we'll be in Weaverville, North Carolina, just north of Asheville. That is also a 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And then Saturday, we'll be in Asheville, North Carolina. That'll be a fun event there. We're talking about live broadcast of the radio show at 9 a.m. and then 10 to 12, getting started with Backyard Poultry Workshop and book signing. Gotta love it. And then we'll head over for a Sunday event, Sunday, June 30th, Newton, North Carolina, at the local Tractor Supply there. And that'll be from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. So we'll be posting a little bit about that next week, also on our Facebook page, dates, times, things like that. So we hope you can make it out. We love to go and see all of our great fans and listeners when we are on the road. And most importantly, spread the chicken love. Let's get over here to the switchboard and let's bring on Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD. Let's give her a big chicken whisperer welcome.
Hi,
hey, Doc, how you doing?
Hey, good.
Thanks
how
for joining
are you?
Us today. Good. We had a little bit of issue with the internet, but no problem. Like people,
yeah.
Our regular listeners know, I've got a backup. I got about three backups we can do, so no worries there. Sometimes when I'm here, I've got four, because when I'm on the road, a lot of times I don't have DSL, obviously. And nonetheless,
I tuned in,
so
and then you disappeared, and I'm like,
so we can learn all about mycotoxins.
Yes. I was getting a little worried because I tuned in and you disappeared, and I was like, did I push the wrong button?
No, it was windscreen being a booger.
I'm sorry. Well, I loved your little talk about, you know, investing a little extra time
mm-hmm.
into getting your coop done right, because, I mean, how many times have I said it?
Mm-hmm.
If you do it right the first time, you're not going to experience a lot of the issues that come with poor management, and getting a coop or a structure well built is one of those things. So take the time to get a fence in, to put a run in, bury the wire, do whatever you need to do. And if you don't know what you need to do, read and expect to invest time and money, because
mm-hmm.
if you go on the cheap route, don't expect a whole lot.
It'll cost you more in the long run, because your time's worth something. Oh my gosh! If you have to wait a whole nother season, if you want to wait, or maybe you're not quite ready, save up that money and then do it one time right the first time. Otherwise, because you're so excited, you just skimp or you don't do it right, and then guess what? You lose those chickens. You have an attack, and you have to go back and do it right the second time, hopefully, instead of having to maybe, I got to go find the hole and patch it.
I was talking to a lady last night, and last night she said, well, I lost a couple of chickens to my neighbor's dog. And I said, oh, how'd the dog get in? Oh, he got loose.
Mm-hmm.
And I said,
mm-hmm.
and how were you preventing the dog's access?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, my chicken's free range. Oh, okay. So I just want to replace two of them, okay? She said, oh, she didn't want to get chicks. She wanted to get started pullets, and she was thinking of going to the auction. I was like, you're going to inherit somebody else's problem. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And, you know, how old are your birds? 5 years. Oh, okay.
Mm.
So these, if you go get started pullets, they're going to be significantly younger, and you're going to have to house them separately. Huh? You know, we
and
go back to basic biosecurity principles.
Yeah, there you go.
Separate your age groups, because young and naive is still young and naive.
I would have asked if her chickens were in her neighbor's yard or the dog came into her yard. If they free
dog
range.
Dog came into her yard.
Okay, gotcha. So. Okay. Free range and like.
There was
a horrid article that I posted on Facebook yesterday.
Oh, I saw that.
Did you read that? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
It was really good.
And
really?
I really liked how people just sliced and diced and dissected. What one person missed on, another person just dissected out that section and proved them wrong. But the thing of it is, all that's got to go to the editor, or else they're not going to, you know, make the guy apologize.
Yeah, I doubt it would be in the paper, but at least they were posting comments online. And that guy who wrote it, I'm sure sees that, or gets alerted
Oh, no.
Every time someone comments on his.
When you write, sometimes you have to just let water, you know, run off your back.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, there's a journalist, I'm sure. It's just like, oh, this is great. I really kicked the hornet's nest this time. That means more readers, and I'll look better. And, you know, controversy, like some of the talking heads on the network. So, what do you call them, shock jocks or something like that? So, anyway,
yeah.
But that was, that was
one
of the worst.
Andy.
Of course not. I never kicked a hornet's nest. but yeah, it was one of the worst I had ever read in since I've been in doing chickens and reading them all. One of the worst I've ever read ever.
It's sad when newspapers resort to that kind of writing, to that kind of journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pretty good indicator of where that paper's going, I think. So. You know, if they can make a cogent argument, I'll listen to
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm-hmm.
But that was nowhere near cogent.
Far from it.
Yeah. Did you know chickens attract rats? We've had that conversation.
I know
times,
it. We've
Andy.
Had it. We've had it a million times. Yeah.
Well, you are right. There is no R in mycotoxins. So, what do you think a myco? Is what does myco refer to?
Oh, geez, myco. I know macro is big, micro is small. Myco, man,
mycelium.
I should have looked it up. Is it a bacteria? A bacteria?
No.
No.
Mycelium.
Okay.
Does that ring a bell at all? Mycelium. Mycelium? I'm trying to give you all these hints.
But I'm not on my game right now. Maybe there's someone in the chat room. Maybe someone
fungus.
In the chat room can. Fungus. That was close.
In the world of microbiology, yes, fungus and yeast does fall in there. But, like, mycotoxins are toxins created by. Go ahead and go.
Oh, somebody in the chat room. Fungus.
Yes, by fungus. So, thinking about the toxins that end up being created by fungus, you know, a lot of people kind of go, huh? But it's that very thing why we don't eat moldy food, rotten food. A lot of times bacteria gets in there, but what we usually don't see are the bacteria. What we do see are the funguses. And sometimes the fungus starts to break things down, and that opens the door for bacteria to come in. So, you know, they do have this synergistic effect, funguses and bacteria. One can open the door for the other, and then you just don't know. Sometimes you don't know which came first. So thinking about mycotoxins, it's not something that happens very often in small flocks, but I wanted to talk about this topic in particular, Andy, because I know some of your listeners do make their own feeds.
Okay, yeah.
And I at least wanted to cover this once so that and they probably already know this, but anybody who's just playing around with the idea needs to know what they're getting into. And it has to do with growing your own grains and then harvesting them and then making it into chicken food. So, interestingly enough, when it comes to mycotoxins, there's been multiple studies that when you're looking at a field of grain, if there's one mycotoxin there, there's usually another. You know, it's not unusual to have a simultaneous occurrence. And that can profoundly affect the level of toxins that ends up in the grain. So we're going to be actually looking from the field to your chicken's plate. And sometimes that does translate to your plate if you've got meat chickens. So the presence of mycotoxins in the grain and how many mycotoxins are in the grain is important. The species that you're trying to feed the grains to is also important. Ducklings are 5 to 15 times more sensitive to the effects of aflatoxin than laying hens.
Wow.
And when you compare different strains of laying hens, certain strains of those hens can be as much as 3 times more sensitive to aflatoxin than other strains. So when we start to delve into this world with poultry, the species that you have is important. What strain you buy is important. And there's all these factors that come into play. You know, we just don't know the exact sensitivity of a particular animal to one or maybe even more mycotoxins. So there's a lot of factors at play. So we're going to go through some of those things. Now,
could that be hereditary? If you said some breeds would have be more susceptible to
some strains within breeds. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
And when we talk laying hens, more than likely we're talking about single comb white leghorns. Because there's a lot of those strains. And then, you know, the work on other breeds hasn't been done because are you going to pay for it, Andy?
Right, nope, not me.
Okay. So, the health status of the animal is important. Okay? Are they stressed? What is their state of maturity? Are they a young chick or are they an adult bird? What is their nutritional status? Are they growing or are they just maintaining? Or have they been through a drought and they're stressed? Or have they been starved for one reason or another because the food is bad and they won't eat it? Is the bird sick? Are they currently suffering from something else that's opening up the door for their susceptibility to the mycotoxin? So those are 4 factors to consider when you're dealing with mycotoxins and how they will affect an animal. So each one of those different things independently and collectively will change the response of a given animal. So dose, of course, is important. All of us in our lifetimes have been given a toxin of some sort, usually through food that we ingest, mostly because as we got older, we stopped hoovering the floor as infants. But you know, we all are exposed to toxins, and, you know, a lot of times the toxins in growing animals will reduce weight gain. But, you know, depending on the dose that you receive, it may not be weight gain that's an issue. It might be resistance to disease that's an issue. You know, if you give half a dose that could kill an animal, you might end up with poor disease resistance. So thinking about how the toxins affect you, affect animals that way. Before I go into individual toxins, and I will go through, you know, several of the ones that can affect birds, think about the continuum of where that feed ingredient goes. Of course, it's sitting out in the field. You know, most of us right now are having good weather conditions or fairly good weather conditions, and we've got crops out in the field that are growing.
Or,
as with what happened on Tuesday, a lot of them got smashed to the ground around here because we had a lot of rain. But looking at those crops in the field, there's things that affect contamination, biological factors. How susceptible is that crop to a certain fungus coming in? Some crops and some strains that you buy, you know, I know you're going to hate this word, but put your hackles down. If you buy your grain from Monsanto versus somebody else, what is the susceptibility of strain A from strain B? Are there compatible fungi already in the field? Is the environment conducive to the fungus growing? And that's controlled by, like, the temperature and the moisture. And is there an opportunity for the fungus to get into the plant? Is there already damage to the plant? And where, what can damage a plant, Andy?
Well, there's insects.
Of course. And rodents. But insects are a big deal. Or they could be, you know, stressed in other ways. Like you could have cold snap. Mold contamination just can occur because you left stubble in the field that got moldy. So there's a lot of things that you can do as a farmer growing grain, and the type of grain you select is very important depending on what your weather is like and what your ground can do for you and what you can physically do, because not everybody has, you know, giant John Deere tractors and all the time in the world. Some folks are, you know, just trying to grow 5 acres of crops. So there's a lot of factors that come into play as to what you produce and how healthy it will be going into the animal's tummy. So after you grow your crops up, what comes next, Andy?
You got to harvest it.
Yep. So harvesting it when the crop is mature, picking a day and watching very closely what the weather's going to do, the temperature, the moisture, has the crop suddenly had some physical damage from a plague of locusts coming in or cross-contamination other ways. You borrowed equipment or your neighbor's field became contaminated and it's wafting over to your field. So if you harvest the crop at the right stage with the optimum moisture content, you'll be okay, or you should do better. After the crop is harvested, where does it go, Andy?
Well, let's see. Once it's harvested, some goes into storage. Some will go into large barns. Some go into trucks and are transported to maybe another sorting facility or middleman who's going to package it and send it off to the retailer.
And you were right. Usually there's a drying step for grain that goes to animal feed. Most of it goes into storage, or drying silo storage step. And that's where they very carefully monitor temperature and moisture inside those big silos. And they do take mold control measures because, you know, you can just count on everything coming in being somewhat dirty. And how long you keep it there is also very important. So you've got to keep things clean and dry. And if you have to use a mold inhibitor, you know, you might have to consider it depending on your situation. Then usually the grain goes to the feed mill. And they have their own steps and procedures they have to consider for maintaining your grain in a safe manner so that nothing grows. Again, we're always going to talk about temperature and moisture, but the season plays into that, obviously. And how long you store the grain, was any mold control used previously, or do you have to use it now? And something I don't think a lot of people think about, Andy, is inventory control at a feed mill. A lot of people just think, you know, feed comes in and feed leaves. Well, sometimes during certain times of the year, you get a glut of feed. And you really have to think about the first feed that comes in has to be the first feed that leaves, so that everything there is this, approximately the same amount of time. And feed mills are places where rodents come into play, so you have to have a rodent control program and hygiene, keeping things clean. Then, usually, for small flock owners, it's sold, it's bagged and sold to a feed store, unless you go to your feed mill directly. And then still, usually, it's bagged and stored until it's sold. And it could be stored next to something at your feed store that has weevils in it. And so your feed gets contaminated and you bring that home. I remember one time when I was a kid, we got 70 bags of feed loaded down that truck, drove home very slowly. And when we got home, I put one bag right next to where I was going to, load it into the feed bin. But I remember I had to run into the house for something, and it took way longer than I thought. And I came back out like 4 hours later, and there was this white stuff all over our black trash can. It was weird because when you touched it, it smeared.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was these tiny little microscopic mites that were then all over the truck, which I had to drive back to the feed store and say, "What is this, guys? You sent me sent me home with contaminated feed." And they're like, "Oh, so sorry. Oh, we didn't mean to pull from that pallet." Mm-hmm. So I had them unload, and then I had to take the car through a car wash to get all those critters off, and I made them pay for that. And then came back, and I checked all their other feed before I, loaded up again. But, those things happen. And you do have to be careful, because anywhere along this continuum, you could get contamination. So once you get your feed home, you need to maintain your feed in such a manner that it doesn't mold. So we end up with pretty hot summers like you do, Andy, It ends up getting pretty muggy. And if you're not going to use your feed within about 45 days, it's going to go bad on you anyhow, because, you start to lose vitamins and minerals due to rancidity. But if you buy a bunch of feed and it gets wet, or it just starts to smell musty at all, could be your barn environment is contaminated with molds that you didn't realize. So how fast you can use up your feed is also important. And, of course, if your equipment isn't clean, you could put clean feed into a dirty feeder and mold will grow.
Yeah.
So that's why I say clean your feeders weekly and let them dry. If you don't have time to let them dry, buy two feeders. Still clean them weekly, just let it dry for a week, and then you can just rotate them. So let's talk about mycotoxins as it relates to human and animal health. Some mycotoxins, not all, but some have been known to be a hazard to human health because when the animal consumes it, it stays in the tissues. It depends on the animal, it depends on the tissue, it depends on the mycotoxin. Healthy animals tend to filter out or detoxify a lot of the mycotoxins that they might be exposed to, but if you don't end up consuming a healthy animal, then it might be transferred to you, the end consumer. So if any of your listeners out there are selling products, that's something to consider. Maintain your equipment in a clean state. Don't use moldy feed. Don't even be tempted by it. Take it back to the feed store if you just bought it. But if you haven't just bought it, what are you doing when the feed gets to your house that is causing the feed to mold? Those are the things that you have to self-assess. And everyone has to think about, okay, what am I doing that needs to change? And a lot of the stuff that I talk about, Andy, is all about change, right?
People hate change.
Well, if you love your birds, you got to keep an open mind.
Yep.
So what happens if you're selling your eggs? Well, there is an economic impact. Animals that are sick from mycotoxins have reduced productivity. There's an increased incidence of disease because a lot of these mycotoxins toxins. If they don't kill the bird or they don't cause lesions in the birds, they're going to suppress the immune system and open the door for bug number two. Bug number two could be salmonella. Bug number two could be avian influenza. So you got to think about what mycotoxins do to the bird's immune system, and it usually means suppressing it. Sometimes it causes damage to vital organs, and I'll talk about which ones tend to go after which organs. And it interferes with reproductive capacity. So if you were breeding showbirds, mycotoxins can cause embryos not to develop, or could reduce egg laying and embryos not to develop. And of course, there's death. Given the right conditions and the right dose, mycotoxins can kill birds. Young animals are most often more susceptible to the effects of mycotoxins. And in poultry, that's aflatoxin, too. Sometimes all you know is that the GI tract ain't doing right. And they're getting lighter, and they're not eating the same amount that they were. And suddenly you might see anemia or jaundice in the bird. So paying attention to your birds and what they're doing is important. So don't just go out there, throw some feed down. Take a look at your birds and see what they're telling you. Let's see. I think I'm going to wait to talk about aflatoxin for a moment. Now, a lot of people are probably freaking out about mycotoxins right now, going, oh, my gosh, this stuff can get my birds. I love my birds. Well, mycotoxins are invisible. They're odorless, and you can't detect them through smell or taste. But you might see caked feed. You might see a little bit of fungus. You're not going to detect the toxin, though. You're not, not all molds create toxins.
You would see a result. Would that be a result of the toxin, like fungus was the result of
fungus
the toxin being there?
Fungus creates toxins. So a fungus, not all funguses create toxins that can affect your birds. But funguses lead to toxins. You're not going to be able to detect the toxin. You will be able, more than likely, to detect the fungus if it's bad enough. If it's bad enough. So, and just keep in mind, not all funguses create toxins, but you don't want to take the chance and feed something bad to your birds. There's about three different ones that you need to be concerned about in poultry, and that's Fusarium, Aspergillus, and Penicillin, or Penicillium. They do produce toxins that can contaminate human food and animal feeds. And, if you don't treat your product right, you're going to see some of these things come about. Now, there are over 300 different types of mycotoxins, but only a limited number have any sort of relevance to the animal industry. All right? So if you want to go study aflatoxins, if I've inspired a young person out there, don't worry, you got a career ahead of you. let's see, what else? All right, prevention. Choose plants that can handle whatever is in your area. Plant stress can, if you decrease plant stress, you're going to decrease the chance that you're going to end up with contamination. If you can, plant varieties that are adapted to your fertilization capacity, your weed control, your irrigation, your crop rotation. And so if you're going to grow your own seed, I'm sorry?
They have some. I'm not talking about the, Ruffalo Settles, Bid Bag Monsanto, but wouldn't they have some that would be resistant to certain types?
Have to do your homework. And you will be talking to your extension agronomist or extension grain crop specialist or your extension agent in your area. If you're really going to go down this path and be dedicated to raising grains to grow your own feed for your birds, you're going to be a grain crop specialist. And you may not want to be somebody who grows for Monsanto, but you will experience the same problems that those growers experience, and you have to understand that there's a learning curve. You may not have gone to school for it, but get ready to put your learning hat on. If you leave stubble out in your fields, crop residues is what they're called, certain pathogens do survive on them in the winter. So your choice in how you leave your crops, whether or not you plant or till or leave a cover crop in, can affect the next crop that goes in, because some of those, like wheat stubble or corn stalks or rice stubble, they can actually have things, molds that grow on them. And large amounts of, think of it as inoculum. You know, they'll have an airborne release of spores and after a rainy period, and that can just start problems for the plants that are in there next year. So last year's problems or last year's management can affect this year's crop. It's all a big continuum. Excuse me. All right. So we pretty much live in a temperate region. We're not on the equator. We're not up in the Arctic. So, you know, if you have a cold, wet condition prior to harvest, you might end up with fusarium-type molds. That tends to be what you get in this area.
And that's when you harvest when it's wet, and then it molds once it's stored?
If you have a temperate region like where we live in with cold, wet conditions prior to harvest, you might anticipate seeing fusarium-type molds.
Okay.
And they produce something called trichothecines. Yeah, I got that out okay. Let's try that one more time. Trichothecines. There's going to be a couple of them where you're going to chuckle at me today. I did practice these words. And that has to do with, you know, certain molds produce more than one kind of toxin. And certain toxins can be produced by more than one kind of mold. So you might end up with what looks like lesions in the mouth or diarrhea. And, you know, if the birds just, you know, looking wimpy and sullen, it's not eating, and it's off to the side, and it's got diarrhea, well, shoot, that could be a bacteria too, right, Andy? We've talked about some of these. So for you to wait and see, that's a risk. You may miss a diagnosis that could quickly be taken care of if you took your bird to the diagnostic lab or a veterinarian who can assist you. So I have a coworker here who says he gets calls of ADR, ain't doing right. And, you know, there's many things that can cause these problems, including vitamin deficiencies, which we talked about earlier in the year. So toxins are really kind of cool, and I respect toxins because most of them, once the toxin is in the grain, they're hard to kill. So if you manufacture the feed using a heat treatment, like you're putting it through a pelletizer to create pellets or pelleted feed, you would think that might kill the toxin, but toxins are designed to stay. Their job is to stay put without being altered by conditions of storage or feed manufacturing. So, you know, that's why it's a problem to get infected grains and you have a young flock or a flock of chicks. So follow the proper storage and handling. If you're going to grow your own grains, have them analyzed for mycotoxins. Depending on what your harvest conditions were just prior to harvest, look for fusarium. Young poultry are more sensitive than older poultry. And if you've got more than one type of mycotoxin, you can have sometimes a synergistic effect or an additive effect. And you can find mold inhibitors out there.
I guess if you're buying feed from maybe a local farm or some guy that says, oh, yeah, I'm going to make my own feed this year.
He's got his own organic or natural mix. You know, I've had that happen. I've had people here say, oh, yeah, I buy my feed from a guy who says it's organic. I was like, is he certified organic?
Right.
No. But it's organic. He said so. Sure, it can be organic, but what steps and measures of assurance do you have that something isn't going to go down just one time and kill everything you've got or hurt
your
bird?
That it's, and the fact that if it's nutritionally balanced, I mean, you got somebody out there that's just, oh, we'll put some soybean, we'll put some wheat, we'll put this, that, and, you know, does he have it? I mean, does he know what percentage protein's in that bag of feed you just bought from him? Or does it just look good? Oh, that looks so good.
And, you know, birds will be picky, and they will pick through things. And, you know, I like birds that don't waste feed because I only make a certain amount of money, and if I'm going to buy them a bag of feed, I want them to eat it all because it's expensive. And if I buy from you, retailer A, B, C, or X, Y, Z, I don't want to buy something that ends up hurting my birds because more than likely, if you're a small-time person, you're not going to want to pay my vet bill, but you should because you sold me something crummy.
Right.
And we do live in a litigious society, don't we, Andy?
Absolutely.
So let's talk about mycotoxins individually. So we've talked about the conditions in which you can store your bags of feed. And think about it. Some toxins can actually cause lesions in the gut or on the skin if you just touch it. Certain toxins are detrimental to the skin. So let's talk about ergotism and ergot poisoning. Have you heard of this one? Since I know you were an EMT.
Right. No, I haven't.
Oh, you haven't. Okay. Well, when I was studying food microbiology way back when, I remember hearing about this, and it was just so fascinating. Because they have a good amount of history on ergotism, and it's been recognized since the Middle Ages, and it's the oldest known toxin out there from fungus. So Saint Anthony's fire is what you get when humans have ergotism. Hmm. And ergotism is caused by the fungus Claviceps purpurei. So Claviceps, what it is, you know, in the Middle Ages, people were eating moldy food because, you know, you ate what you could get. It was the Middle Ages. So humans experienced, at first, cold sensations in their extremities. So starting with their toes and their fingers, and then it went to their hands and feet. Then that cold sensation in the hands and feet were followed by intense burning.
Hence
the name St. Anthony's Fire. Everybody who's eating lunch, get ready. It's Dr. McCrae time. Then gangrene would set in.
Ooh.
In the extremities. And it same with animals, too. Of course, an animal can't tell you, hey, I've got extreme cold in my left hoof, and or my right wing isn't feeling right. Now it's burning. It's something that affects the nervous system. So, Claviceps is a mold that colonizes and replaces kernels of grain and makes a hard, dark purple or black mass called an ergot, and that's how we got the name ergotism. And although ergot has some pharmaceutical properties, we don't really recommend that you feed it to your animals. Claviceps colonizes wheat, rye, and triticale, and that's what most commonly causes ergotism in humans and animals. In chickens, ergotism causes growth reductions, reduction in egg production, and since it affects the nervous system, you're going to see incoordination. So they're going to start to lose their balance. They might be appearing droopy. And that is a symptom for many different diseases, right, Andy?
Correct.
From vitamin problems to viruses. So this one can affect lesions. It can cause abnormal feather development. It can cause necrosis of the beak, the comb, the toes, and, of course, their guts can be swollen because, well, it's a toxin. Their guts can be really unhappy. And depending on the situation, if you get rid of the feed, you might see a gradual return, or if they get a big enough dose early on, they may die. So that's why wait and see isn't always the best thing to do. Take a feed sample in and see if it can be analyzed. Now, I know it's close to 1 o'clock, Andy. Do you want to go to commercial?
We can continue, no worries.
Oh, okay.
Were
there any questions in the chat room that I missed?
I didn't see any.
Okay, good. All right, let's talk about another toxin, trichophthisine.
Okay.
And that's caused by fusarium. And the history on this one, it's early in the 20th century, like the 1930s in Russia, during the Second World War, that's when it was really kind of noticed as a disease. There were a lot of labor shortages, and with labor shortages during the war, sometimes grain had to be overwintered, wheat, rye, millet, in the fields. So they didn't harvest in the fall. They left them in the field. And then harvesting occurred in the spring. So when bread was made from that grain, it caused, well, gut inflammation, acute gastroenteritis, followed by ulcers of the face and in the mouth. And the face swelled up. The lymph nodes enlarged. And in later stages, if people kept continuing to eat the bread, they had bone marrow disorders, anemia, and uncontrollable hemorrhages. Obviously, sickness and mortality was greater than 50% in some villages. Yeah. And it happened to livestock and poultry and people. Very unfortunate history. It's a negative way to find out about fusarium.
Mm-hmm.
These trichophthisines created by fusarium causes caustic injury, so burning sensation to the mucous membranes and the skin, so you can just touch it and get burned. That also causes the facial swelling and the mouth swelling. So one of the things that I find really interesting is that one of these trichophthisines has a cool name. It's called the T2 toxin, and it's got its own interesting set of symptoms, but there's another one. It's one of those words. We call it DAS, diacetoxyserpinol. It's a hard one. DAS. And, you know, these two toxins have occurred. They reduce growth. The birds are really depressed and have bloody diarrhea. And when you open the birds up, you're going to see that the mouth is necrotic. When you do necropsy, the mouth is necrotic. The entire GI tract is red, and you know the liver is going to look mottled, and distension of the gallbladder occurs. The spleen may be completely atrophied, so that's the immunosuppression. And throughout the gut, you might see hemorrhages. So not a good one neither one of these trichothecines are things that you want to come across.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the birds, you know, will taste it and go, uh-uh, no, I'm not eating it. So there may be feed refusal. If you come in and the birds haven't touched their feed, and, you know,
uh-huh. Yeah.
You need to pay attention to how fast they're going through the feed. So think about what your birds normally eat and consume and what they're doing now. Okay, do you want to do a commercial break?
We can keep going. This is interesting.
Okay.
No problem.
All right.
I'm good.
Hey, so when it's not interesting, then you want to do commercial breaks. Got it?
No.
No, I'm kidding. All right, aflatoxicosis. Aflatoxicosis is another one, makes aflatoxin. And we have a little bit of history that starts about 1950 on this. There was a disease in dogs called hepatitis X. And that occurred in...
Hepatitis X.
Yes. And it occurred in the southeastern United States, and it was tied to moldy dog food.
Okay.
Then in 1960 in England, they had something that caused high mortality in turkeys, same mycotoxin. They called that turkey X disease. Turns out peanut meal imported to England from Brazil was really super contaminated with fungus. And that fungus was Aspergillus flavus. Aspergillus flavus tends to give us aflatoxicosis. And, you know, it's not the most common, but it's enough that I'm bringing it up because it does happen, Aspergillus flavus. It puts out several different groups of mycotoxins. This one aspergillus does is B1, B2, G1, G2, and they all cause aflatoxicosis, but B1 is the most common in grains and is highly, highly toxic. Aflatoxin, you can find it in peanuts, corn, cottonseed, any of the products that those things make. You can also find it in other grains. But you can also find it in poultry litter. So if you're reusing litter or you were using a deep litter method, it's an option. It could show up. And that worries me. So normally it attacks grains. Not all Aspergillus flavus, not all strains produce a highly toxic toxin, aflatoxin. So, like I said, long ago in this show, if you are interested in studying toxin production or mycotoxin, it's a big field. conditions. Favorable conditions can be localized within a volume of stored grain or transported grain. So, you know, the outer part might be okay, but there might be a hot spot in one corner. And this is a toxin that is, again, stable, so it can handle being pelletized and put through processing. Now, aflatoxicosis tends to affect grains that are damaged by insects or drought stress or broken pieces of grain, like screenings, things that are screened out. So they like to gain access through insidious methods. We'll just leave it there. How about that? It's often affecting the liver of the chickens. So this one likes to go after the liver. Of course, production problems, mortality are an option, reduction in growth. Carcass pigmentation is an option. Egg production is affected. Immune function is affected. And strangely enough, the birds will then have an increased nutrient requirement for protein because they're not getting it from the feed. The feed's hurting them. Trace elements can be affected and vitamins can be affected. And, of course, the birds may die. And when you open up a bird on necropsy, they could be jaundiced. They could be edema all over the body, hemorrhages all over the body, tan or yellow discoloration of the liver. And normally, what color is the liver, Andy?
Liver is in like kind of a nice brown color.
A brownish red, almost a rust color, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A healthy liver. So tan or yellow equals not good. Not the colors we want to see when we do a necropsy on the bird. It can also cause swelling of the kidneys. Because, of course, the kidney's like, hey, trying to get this out of me. And, you know, exit point is through the kidneys and the ureters. You may not necessarily see big spots on the liver. Sometimes, depending on the dose, it could be microscopic changes to the liver. And so that's one of the things that your diagnostician does. When they open up a bird, they're going to take samples of the liver from two or three places in the liver and look at it in a microscope. And that's its own interesting process. So there you go. There's aflatoxicosis. The last one I'm going to talk about is ochratoxicosis.
Okra.
And ochratoxicosis, O-C-H-R-A, toxicosis. And it doesn't have to do with the vegetable okra. Don't freak out.
okra.
So here's the history on it. In Denmark, for like 4 decades, they had a syndrome of unthrifty pigs that weren't gaining any weight because they had something called a chronic renal disease. So what's the renal system, Andy?
The renal system, which would be the kidneys, getting all of the liquid waste out of the body.
You got it. So, you know, they fail to gain weight. Their kidneys are swollen. And it was the feed. The feed was getting contaminated with Penicillium viridicatum. And that was the cause of this particular disease in pigs. And the fungus creates ochratoxin and sometimes citrinin. And it, you know, it's very toxic to the nephrons, which are the functional units of the kidneys. And, you know, it wasn't just in Denmark. It happened in a few other countries in Europe. But ochratoxin has been detected in the kidneys of chickens with renal lesions, and that was also identified in Denmark. But it happens other places. Ochratoxin A, B, and C, they produce toxigenic strains of Penicillium viridicatum. But it can also be produced by Aspergillus ochratius. So, you know, sometimes we have to give props to viruses, bacteria, and fungi that hang out in the same communities and go, hey, can I borrow your mechanism for making that toxin? And some of them are like, okay. And, you know, sometimes it's not that friendly of an exchange. Sometimes one fungus just is like, rawr, and takes over another fungus and just inherits the skill. So ochratoxin A is the most toxic and the greatest threat for poultry production. What are you going to see in your flock if you have this problem? There's been 3 disease outbreaks involving turkeys in the United States, and what did they see? They saw a reduction in feed intake, increases in mortality, and they had both large and small lesions inside the kidneys when they did necropsies on these birds. You can
so in that
cause
case, you wouldn't even know until you had those mass deaths and said, hey, let's figure out. They do the necropsy, and then they find out. So just from an outside, even the most experienced turkey farmer that saw this, it would have to be diagnosed due to death.
In the diagnostic lab. And, you know, there are times when you just go out there, Andy, and it's dead.
Right.
Why? Are more going to die next? Use your diagnostic lab, especially if it's free or if you can afford it. Use the diagnostic lab. Is it a problem with the feed? Is it viral? Is it bacterial? Is it something that you did? is everyone in the area experiencing this problem, and you are point case A and going to help diagnose a problem that's about to go rampant. You know, these are all the things that we think about as scientists or epidemiologists. So other things that you're going to see target organs have lesions, livers, kidney. You'll also probably see visceral gout. Immune function becomes questionable. You might also see certain blood coagulation problems. Reduced egg production is another thing that can pop up. And a lot of this sounds the same, but, you know, ain't doing right is ain't doing right, and you need to find out what's going on. Sometimes it might be worth it to bring in the sick chicken and a sample of the feed, and they'll run the test. If you buy bags of feed and it smells moldy or musty, and then your birds start to have diarrhea, look unthrifty, look inside the beak. Not all chickens are going to be thrilled with you doing this, mind you. But if you see anything that looks red, swollen, like a lesion or a canker or something like that, you might have a very short period of time in which you have to take care of this problem before they completely stop eating or they're all sick. And you can make a difference if you move quickly enough. One of my favorite books I got several years ago, after watching a PBS special of all things. There used to be a show on PBS where they would go through history books by history authors and, you know, things like, have you ever read Guns, Germs, and Steel?
No.
That's a really interesting book for a microbiologist like me. But historical analysis as seen from the point of view of microbes. And I can recommend a book called Poisons of the Past because it was really cool to see how history and the Dark Ages was affected by food and the toxins that affected food. Like, why did certain regions switch from rye to potatoes as their main carbohydrate source? And what problems came with that, or what problems disappeared with that change? So the author is Mary Kilborn Matossian. It's called Poisons of the Past, Molds, Epidemics, and History. Mind you, in sections it can be kind of dry, but when it gets to the Salem witch trials,
just
that was cool. The amount of research that they did into where the mills were located in Salem, where the fields were, and what the weather conditions were for that time of year, which fields were on low ground that tended to have high moisture content and therefore had more chance of getting ergot, and which mills supplied those infected grains to which families, and which of those families ended up being infected. So that was kind of a really cool analysis of how ergot could be related to the Salem witch trials.
East Dallas Dave, early on in the show, one of the first comments in the chat room was about they thought it might be linked to that. That was really cool.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting theory, and I wish that show were still on television, but c'est la vie. But that's a book that I can recommend that you go get your library if your library carries it, or if they can do it through interlibrary loan. I think it's a good read. It's history as determined by microbes. And another one is Guns, Germs, and Steel. Another one is Plagues of the Past. And being a microbiologist, I like it.
Cool. You reminded me of, I would have never known this until we had kids, but truly on long trips and listening to a lot of the children's rhymes and songs, and some of them are pretty morbid.
Mm-hmm. Ring around the rosy, pocket full of posies, ashes, we all fall down.
Yeah, there's tons of them, though. I mean, it's like, there's this one we have that stays in the camper that we play, and talking about cutting the mice tails off with a butcher knife, and it's a kid's song. It's just like, did they just say? So, yeah, some of them, Jen being a kindergarten
teacher. A lot of people
teacher,
don't know what the where these songs came from and their historical significance.
Yeah, so it's like, oh, my gosh, are you serious?
Yeah. I remember learning about Ring Around the Rosie from my grandmother, and she was like, stop singing that song. I'm like, okay, Grandma, what's up?
There's one with whooping cough and measles, and maybe that one's in the same song. Anyway, so, yeah, some of them are pretty morbid.
So there you go. There's an interesting little bit of history tucked in there for those who have a penchant for history and you know, it's an interesting topic. If you're going to raise your own grain to feed for your chickens, you're going to have to put that learning hat on and be willing to pay attention to when your extension office puts out alerts in your area. We've had a problem with blah, blah, blah organism or pest. Be aware that you need to do this or check your crops. Or, you know, depending on the area, what's what. You just need to pay attention to what's in your area. And I know here, like the corn, in some of the low-lying fields, they're just swamped. They're turning yellow. Ugh. You know, some of this corn harvest, last year we had a drought in certain areas here in Delaware. The corn's like, okay, enough rain already.
Right.
I'm good.
Right. Yeah.
There you go.
Any
questions in the chat room?
No, none in the chat room, but I've got, I guess, a follow-up. Just, you know, you talk about, you know, if you're growing your own chicken feed, then there's a lot to it than just growing it and mixing it in a bucket and then give it to your chickens, whether it be the nutritional content, is it nutritionally balanced, but also these things with the mycotoxins you have to look out for. But on being more focused on, I guess, the majority of folks out there, the majority of our listeners that just go up here to the Tractor Supply, their local feed and seed, buy, you know, 4 bags of feed and take it back, you know, to their house or their homestead. I think we started the basics going, you know, look at where you're keeping it. Is it high humidity? Is it high moisture? How long are you going to keep it? You know, did you get a good deal and you bought
it? Get into it.
Rodent, yeah. Did you buy a lot because it was on sale? And, you know, by the time you get to that last bag, you know, is it going to be, you know, fit to eat? And, you know, are you keeping it under the house or, you can, you know, that type of thing. And then, you know, I, for one, I'll raise my hand, I don't keep the tags of the feed bags if something, you know, should happen. I need a lot number or something like that. I don't even know if you or the USD recommends that if you've got, you know, for how long to even do it if you have an issue with feed. But, you know, at the beginning, at the more common level, you know, watching that feed, maybe not buying too much that you don't need before, oh, I got a great deal, I got 10 bags that last me 3 months, being aware of that, where you keep it, humidity, the rain, if it gets wet, you said the rodents as well that can bring in disease. Didn't they, that huge egg recall a few years back, 500 million eggs, whatever it was, supposedly that was deemed brought in by rodents getting into the feed? You remember that huge egg recall?
I think it was a feed mill problem.
Yeah, feed mill.
I don't know if it was unclean conditions at the feed mill or if the grain came in unclean.
Yeah, because I heard later from somebody that they told the public that it was rodents in the feed, but then the truth was, no proof of this, just the grapevine, was that corn harvest that year was very, very wet and stored and then shipped up the Mississippi to the mills and that it was a grain issue from moldy grain that caused that, not necessarily whatever. But, you know, hey, 6-12, half dozen the other, I guess it could happen either way.
And at Tractor Supply or wherever you choose to buy your feed, if they do everything right, this is just like consumer faux pas with buying raw chicken meat. Everybody else can do everything right, but if the consumer does something wrong, the consumer can make themselves sick with raw chicken meat, like cross-contamination in the kitchen or not storing it properly. So same with grain.
Hey, remember that,
everybody
could
be doing everything right, but if you are storing the grain for 8 months, and, of course, all the vitamins have gone, your birds are going to be affected. If you are storing your feed in a trash can to keep rodents and insects out, great, but don't store the trash can in direct sunlight.
Gotcha.
You know, simple things like that, that, you know, so it could be that you had a house sitter move that trash can, or could be that your kids were out feeding and they were goofing around and
they left
moved
it open
the trash
and it got rained on.
Yeah, yeah. Or you bought feed and stopped at the grocery store after the feed store, and a thunderstorm came along and rained on your feed bags, and you couldn't get home fast enough. You know, those are all things that, you know, happen.
You get home and you're too tired to unload it, and it stays in the car, the hot car, at 150 degrees every day for 6 days before you unload it.
Right. All these things can happen, and, you know, that's all your chickens have to eat. And I know your listeners out there love their birds, love them to pieces. So nobody wants to do something.
Yep, all kinds
that
of pieces, legs, thighs, breasts, and wings.
Nice.
We love them pieces, especially when they're cut up in the fryer. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, all you vegetarians and vegans out there, I'm sorry because they all
funny,
listen
Andy.
To the show. I
clever,
know it, but
clever.
Yeah, some of us love them to pieces. Hey, we have named chickens that we don't eat called our layers, and then we have some that Jen doesn't name and doesn't get attached to called our eaters.
Yes.
Oh,
and goodness. That's what they do. They eat.
Oh, jeez. And poop.
Yes. It's a very efficient system, isn't it?
Jeez. And drink. Oh, my gosh. Oh, I can remember way back in the day, we went and drove about an hour away to buy what we thought were going to be white leghorns. And we thought at the time they were quite big. And we got home and we were feeding them and they were eating us out of house and home and pooping and drinking tons of water. And they got so fat. And I'm like, Jen, I think we have a problem. I don't think these are white leghorns.
Oh, my.
They were broilers.
Did
way
you eat
back
all
in
that
the
year?
Day. We actually gave them away. We had somebody that came and got them. We did. And Jen hated it because they were such nice birds. They would come up and she's like, they'd come up and just kind of lean over on my leg like they're hugging me. Yeah, Jen, because they're so fat, they can't stand up. I don't think it's a case of I love you so much, please don't eat me. I think it's a case of, somebody I can lean on to take some of this weight off.
Yes.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, golly.
So, yeah,
I hope your listeners out there have a greater appreciation now of what goes in to making that grain that you see out in the field, our amber waves of grain, into what makes it to your feed store safely. And, of course, if you're going to go your own route, if you're going to be self-sustaining and grow all your own food, including the grain for your chickens, understand that mycotoxins are a relevant risk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, if you are in good contact with your extension office, you should be going to their workshops on grain harvesting, on grain management, crop management.
Storing and all that stuff. Yeah.
Storage, yeah. And then if you have an event like we have here in Delaware, we have something called Delaware Ag Week, where there is an entire, I think it's a day-long session just for grains, small grains and large grains, where they talk about current research.
a million dollar question, and we'll wrap it up. Not really related, but talking about grains and talking about the corn up there, and who knows what kind of crop we'll have this year, which will affect prices even more next year. Of even, you know, hey, the land pellets, the scrap, whatever you get in at the stores, where, you know, we got people that are paying just right out of feed stores. You know, the standard brands, I'll say, the Dewmore, the Purina, the Manipro, the Nutrina, things like that, anywhere from, if you're lucky, $16.95 a bag up to about $20 a bag. And that doesn't, we're not even going to get into the organic at $30 and $40 a bag. But do you think, because I talked to a lady on the phone last night, and she said that she's on SSI, that's her main income. I think Social Security Disability is what she's on. And she's got limited and fixed income. And she was telling me she had to just bite the bullet, as much as she loves her birds, and she really does love her birds. I know this lady, and it probably broke her heart to have to get rid of them, but she could not, you know, afford the feed. You know, she was like, you know, she didn't not feed them, but it got to a point to where, like, I just can't afford to do this, what I need to do properly for my birds, instead of saying, oh, well, I'll only buy two bags instead of four, whatever she needed, and say, well, those just have to go on a diet. She didn't want to not properly care for them, so she had to get rid. I think she kept maybe 20. And so my question here is, do you think, that made me think last night, you know, because you and I both know most of the media, when they hear about people wanting backyard chickens, of course, we know there's bukus of benefits. We know all the top five, but they always seem to focus on the eggs. Well, you can get eggs for 99 cents in the store. That'll be their fight. Or if you know, you can go and there's enough farms here in farmers markets, you can get your eggs there for, you know, $3.95 or whatever like that. And then someone does a study where, you know, $1,000 coop and all this stuff and all that. They lay for 3 years. All this junk that they post. We all know it's more than just the egg. But do you think there is a, if this food keeps going up, maybe next year, let's say it creeps up to $25 a bag, do you think there is a threshold there that, if that's the right word, where people may choose to stop keeping their backyard chickens, even if they have a good passion for them and they're named, because of, I mean, I guess we'd say the same thing with dogs or cats, but...
I was going to say, there's your analogy right there. If you can't afford to maintain an animal in the manner in which it deserves to be maintained, most families working on a budget are going to have to make a choice. Do they keep their family fed? Do they keep the lights on? Do they keep the roof over their head?
Right.
Or do they forego the pet? And that's been a excruciating choice for many families since this recession started, and also since the price of food has gone up. Now, of course, feed mills, part of their job is to produce a food, a balanced food, at least cost.
Mm-hmm.
So that means some of them have had to go to not only grains, but also blending in low-cost, like, say, bakery waste product.
Right.
So they are working very hard to maintain the cost of feed without it going up so far that they lose customers.
Gotcha.
And therefore lose an entire field, such as keeping chickens.
Yeah, because they'll
it's a balance.
And like I said, it's got to be, you know, it's not about the, it's about the, the, all the benefits, and if anybody tries to say, "Oh, I'm going to get chickens, so I don't have to buy 99 cent eggs at Walmart," they're you know, like I said, our listeners know the issue there. But it was because she loved chickens; it was sad to see, but she had to make that decision because feed's getting so darn high. I mean, I look at it now. I've been fortunate enough to for the last 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 years. I probably have not, to be honest with our listeners, had to buy one single bag of feed because of the wonderful sponsors we've had. 2 years with Manipro, a year with Purina, and now with Tractor Supply, getting their Dewmore. Every single time I'm there, though, I look at the prices to see, thank goodness I'm blessed to have these sponsors, because I look at that price and I'm thinking, yeah, I'm picking up 10 bags of feed. That would be almost $200. And that reflects, I'm thinking about how many chickens I have. I'm thinking if I had to fork out, you know, if I'm going through, say, two bags a week, and I had to fork out, you know, $180 if I was going through eight bags a month or whatever it would be, I'm like, you know, holy cow, I think I would at this point, even right now, say, forget it, Jen. So we're going to have eight chickens, not, you know, not 40, you know, about 25, right. 25 layers, and about every 10 weeks we'll get maybe 15 meat birds. But I'm like, at least that's the schedule we're on, and I'm like, there's no way. I don't think I would do it. I said I would definitely downsize, and because that's a chunk of change. And we're, you know, you think, okay, that's $180. I'm not eating $180 in chicken and eggs every month. There's no way. So again, it goes back to that hobby. You know, how many people? What do you spend on trains if you're a train hobbyist?
How efficient is that crop in stressful conditions?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I know you don't like that one name that I mentioned, but
right.
better believe after last year they are taking a look, a good strong look at performance of different types or strains of corn or other crops in stressful conditions and their performance, so that, you know, you can still get decent yields that translate to affordable grain for our animals to eat. But, you know, somebody who's raising their own 1 acre of wheat isn't going to be able necessarily to do that work, not that kind of work. They're not going to have the same resources as some of those companies.
Yeah, that, honestly, I couldn't fathom raising my own chicken feed. I just couldn't imagine doing it. You know,
it's
like
a full-time job, and you've heard me mention it. You can get your degree in poultry nutrition, and, you know, that's its own degree program, its own degree path, and, you know, analysis of ingredients is part of that.
That's the big scientist that the Purinas and the Manipros hire. They have the nutritional science that work on the blending of the nutrients for their feed in their bags, I guess. Yeah, so, yeah. Probably no problem ever trying to find a job if you have that degree. So.
No, they don't. And, you know, I always see, you know, teaching positions for animal nutritionists or poultry nutritionists. It's a great field.
There you go, folks, going back to college. or heading to college.
Hey,
yeah.
UGA is a great program.
There you go. If you like the Bulldogs, I guess. I was raised in a Georgia Tech home. Didn't go there, wasn't
honestly
smart enough. But
I don't think of the Bulldog at UGA. I think of the poultry program.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, maybe. Who was thinking about that? Said, no, we better not be. Well, there's the South Carolina Gamecocks, so maybe Georgia was thinking Bulldogs, not more agriculture. So, but hey, Doctor, thank you so much for joining us today. Fascinating topic, very
Did
interesting.
Did you learn something new, Andy?
Yeah, it could be as simple as when you buy your bags today from Tractor Supply, the where you keep them, how long you keep them, what you do with them, the environment that they're in, to growing your own feed, and even just
and
paying
all
attention.
That's involved. I just hope
Absolutely.
That your listeners have a greater appreciation now of that bag of feed they pick up at the feed store.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, and we'll see you back here in a couple of weeks. We hope you have a great month.
Take care.
Great. Thank you so much. All right. That was poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McCrae, PhD, and co-author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. And we'll be back right after this short break.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
All righty, folks. Thank you very much for staying with us today. Great, great show today. Very interesting, very educational. As always, why would you get your information from anywhere else, especially a blog, but then right here, Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, where we bring in the experts in their field to come on and teach us all about our backyard poultry. I guarantee you, you won't get that information you learned today at any blog. No one's going to be just going to Google and looking crap up and typing it on their blog like we had today. That's what we're talking about right here with Mondays, Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, a couple of Thursdays out of every month, poultry scientist and professor Dr. McRae, the ALBC, Richard Frudenberger. Awesome. Tell all your friends. Tune in every day, Monday through Friday, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And we hope you'll tune in soon. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.